Let's Talk is the show here on a Wednesday. We will have some open phone time coming up at the end of the hour. But I don't think we're going to solve my parking frustration, but maybe we'll at least be able to get to the bottom of my cell phone frustration this morning.
I don't know if we'll get to the bottom of it. We may head down a little bit. I don't know. Now, again, the background on this, before we introduce our guest, the background on this is, all right, I've got some friends that I've talked to in recent weeks, and for some reason, we start talking about cell phones, and the one guy's like, I don't understand. I used to be able to make phone calls at this certain spot or location.
Yep.
I can't do it anymore. And then another person, hey, I have the same problem. And I remarked, well, you know, actually, while I think about it, there have been some, I've had some troubles, like, what the heck is going on here? So I thought, all right, let's get a guest. And we have a repeat guest, actually. Let's welcome back to our show, Sasha Meinrath from Penn State. Sasha, good morning. Thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here. Glad to be a recidivist.
Oh, okay. I like it.
There you go. We're getting to the bottom of something.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Now, Sasha, we had you back on in the fall, and we were talking
indeed
back then about rural broadband, which is a very important issue for a lot of people, you know, from home education, business, you know, a lot of different stuff. And definitely want to touch on that as well. But first off, for folks who, you know, missed that, this actually several months ago now, give us some background. Tell us about yourself, you know, what you do or teach and work on at Penn State. You have a lab or a group that you work with. Tell us about what you do there.
Yes, well, don't hold it against me, but I come out of the Washington, D.C. think tank realm, which is to say before I came to State College and Penn State in 2015, I was inside the belly of the beast working on technology and telecommunications policy, usually losing those fights, but long story short, I know how that sausage all got made, and it's bleak, and what this results then in is the current state of affairs, which is many of the folks in your listenership range probably have suboptimal broadband, that's being kind, and that is the result of both market failure and failure of policy. Fast forward to now, and we are amidst a boom in investing in broadband infrastructure. We actually this fall are likely to see an additional $42.45 billion poured into broadband implementation. So this super geeky niche that I've been in is now super sexy, and everyone is now interested in broadband. I view that as a win. And, of course, this guarantees us nothing. We certainly have the ability to squander $42.45 billion if we're not thoughtful about how we implement our solutions. So this is, in 2024, this is the big battle. Can we get universal, affordable, you know, low-cost, real broadband out to everyone in Pennsylvania and the nation?
Now, I'm taking notes here. So you're saying you think it's possible that the federal government might not run this as efficiently and effectively as possible, that this is a possibility. I'm keeping notes here because, boy, I thought these guys were just the epitome of efficiency and effectiveness. But it sounds like in this one instance, maybe, it could possibly not work out that way.
That's right. I mean, there's a lot of good that will come of these programs, and I don't want to downplay that. But without meaningful accountability, we are destined to have very suboptimal outcomes. And, you know, the folks that are harmed are really the folks that are, you know, in the ruralest areas of our states. The folks that are harmed are the people that have been on the wrong side of the digital divide. And, you know, this is not unprecedented, as we're about to talk about, you know, these problems of kind of downplaying the limited scope of connectivity has plagued the broadband sector, and it has plagued the wireless and cellular sector. And we all live a reality that is often officially disavowed right? Officially, we've got universal connectivity. Officially, we've all got great cellular connectivity. As I'm sure we'll hear from some of your listeners, like, that isn't necessarily true.
All right, now we'll talk about cell phones a little bit. Let me stick with rural broadband, Sasha. Since we had you on back in the fall, has anything happened or changed? I mean, this is Scott. I live in a rural area. I've been waiting for, like, new offers from somebody. Nothing. Has anything changed since we had you on last?
Yeah. Well, we're getting closer, which is to say, you know, besides the efficiency of the federal government, one has to also look at the timeliness of the federal government. The $42.45 billion that I keep talking about, that was allocated in the 2021 Infrastructure Act, which is to say we are 3 years into this program and the money still hasn't left. Which is to say, what is happening, and, you know, to put the positive spin on this, is that we are very likely to see this money moved out the door this year. On the other hand, this is 2024. And, like, what have folks been doing for the last 3 years? It's like, this is a slow-moving glacial process. And what that results in is your experience, which is that people on the ground who are like, we need broadband yesterday, have been left waiting for years for these implementations.
All right. I realize there are impacts beyond education with that, for sure, with businesses and just, but from the education standpoint, because not only are these many areas struggling, because, again, they can't effectively get on their computers, or in some cases just can't, period, get on their computers at home to do a lot of the work that needs done. But when you combine that with the, you know, coming out of the pandemic and a lot of, I mean, we are seeing just a rash of issues, mental health issues, isolation issues, you know, all of the things that that are a result of coming out of the pandemic. Like, I don't know if there's any way to quantify this, but I mean, it feels like we have set up a very devastating, and I don't think I'm overstating that, devastating situation for a good chunk of our kids trying to make their way through, you know, and trying to ultimately do what we all want to do, which is have a better life, you know, for our kids than what we have. I don't know. It feels like we're we're now tying both hands behind their backs instead of just one.
Yeah, and you can quantify this in multiple different ways. You can look at the direct cost to households, and the federal government has looked into this and has estimated that on average, a household loses about $1,850 a year if they don't have connectivity, right? So you're not able to buy the cheap goods online. You've got to spend more of your time. You've got these detriments that are measurable in terms of cash dollars in our pockets. You can also look at these secondary effects, right? Businesses can't be as efficient if they don't have a broadband connection. But then you can look at, as you mentioned, the mental health, the isolation, these tertiary impacts. This all adds up. And it is in many ways consigning a variety of communities to kind of second-class status. We're in the information age. This is a digital era, and if you don't have access to the critical resource that is broadband, you are at a disadvantage across all the domains of your life, work and professional, personal and social, civic, everything is detrimentally impacted if you do not have access, if you do not adopt, if you can't adopt broadband in today's era. And that is a huge net negative to society. It's why every other highly industrialized nation on the planet has planned this out, and why it's so egregious that the United States has no federal strategy around this, but the state also has no comprehensive strategy to ensure universal, affordable adoption of broadband.
So you're saying we're behind everybody else?
We started 20 years ago at the head of the class. We were like, if this were a Formula One race, we were like laps and laps and laps ahead. We are now middling, which is to say we haven't lost, but to lose that lead so quickly points to massive market and policy failure combining to do a massive disservice to the country. So yes, today we are losing ground year by year, and whereas the $42.45 billion is a step in the right direction, I wouldn't, you know, discount that, it will have only a modest impact on the overarching problem, which is that we have no comprehensive national or state policy to ensure that everyone gets access to what is a critical... I mean, imagine if we did, like, you know, school this way. Like, we just sort of threw it to the wind and decided, like, you know, nobody really needs a mandatory education. We would be worse off as a society. And yet that's what we've done with broadband.
Let's get a quick definition here, Sasha, for folks that missed when you were on in the fall or they just can't remember. Broadband, that's a nice term. What the heck does that mean? What is broadband? What is that?
That's right. Well, trying to stay out of the weeds, but yes, there is an official definition that says broadband is a internet connection with the speed of 25 megabits per second in the download direction and 3 megabits per second in the upload direction. What that translates to in real life is that you can do 2 to 3, you know, streaming videos down, but only one up, which what we saw during COVID, for example, is when people were trying to do like distance education on a broadband connection, often they were getting really jagged, laggy, suboptimal educational experiences because too many kids were trying to do distance education simultaneously on a broadband connection. Now, that definition may shift next month. You know, I'm reading tea leaves here, but it would not surprise me if the FCC decides to up what the official speeds are to 100 megabits per second by 20. And these definitions really, you know, sort of set a baseline for what you should expect. What I will tell you is that anything that we're building today, if it's not what's called fiber to the home, if it's not a fiber optic system that's delivering 1,000 megabits per second, it's obsolete by the time it's built, which is to say there's almost no other highly industrialized country that's building out infrastructure less than a gig, less than 1,000 megabits per second. The U.S. stands alone in attempting, aspiring to an obsolete network build, and unfortunately a lot of what will be built with that $42.45 billion will be obsolete by the time it is built.
That's terrible. I mean, it's hard to work.
That's terrible. I mean, it's a squandering of public funds on the one hand, but also it means once built, right? Like when somebody comes through to Milheim and builds out an infrastructure, how long do you think it'll be before we rebuild that infrastructure? Could be a generation. So you're consigning folks to sort of this slower tier digital livelihoods for a generation. And that, again, that's a huge disservice.
Ironhead, do you know your speed at home? Do you ever do a speed test? Okay. Now, you live in town here. You live in the State College area. Okay.
Yeah, although we have issues from time to time. I mean, we have it.
I live in Penns Valley, all right? I live in a rural area. Yeah. I mean, Sasha, that 25 by 3, I mean, I'm barely over that right now. And if you mentioned that change to 100, if they actually do that, I guess I don't have broadband anymore where I live. Forget it. There are times where, you know, my wife and I are home at night. She's watching a movie. Maybe I'm watching a Penn State sports game. And every now and then, the spinning wheel of death.
Oh, yeah.
Zing, 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 zing. Like, arrr. So this calendar year, Sasha, your prediction, is something going to happen this calendar year?
Correct. Yeah, I'll bet a pint. So, you know, if I lose this, it's a round on me. But I do anticipate that we will see what's called the BEAD program, that's that $42.45 billion, we'll see the requests for proposals being put out from the state. We'll see people starting to, in essence, propose what should be done with this funding. Now, again, that is money being sort of allocated. That doesn't mean that the broadband magically shows up on day one. It's going to be a multi-year intervention. And that, again, while we're all twiddling our thumbs desperately awaiting the completion of these programs and projects, you know, this will be an opportunity cost for the state, which is to say it will cost our state billions to be as disconnected as we are. And into that space is exactly why you should be investing as a state in a critical infrastructure. We do it for roads, we do it for electrical, we do it for water, we do it for a lot of these other things. We just don't do it for connectivity.
All right, Sasha Meinrath is our guest from Penn State. We're going to take a break. Come back, talk about cell phones, get you angry some more. Oh, wonderful. Stay tuned. We're coming back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox. Fox Ironhead.
The NFL Scouting Combine is underway in Indianapolis. Prospective draft picks are being put through their paces through March 4th as teams compile data on the players available for this year's draft. 10 Penn State players are at the Combine, including offensive tackle Olu Fashanu, defensive lineman Chop Robinson and Adisa Isaac, tight end Theo Johnson, offensive lineman Hunter Norzad and Caden Wallace, linebacker Curtis Jacobs, and defensive backs Kalen King, Johnny Dixon, and Daquan Hardy. All 10 Penn State starters are ranked in the top 11 of their weight class in the final Intermat rankings of the regular season. Bo Bartlett, Levi Haynes, Carter Starace, Aaron Brooks, and Greg Kirkfleet are all number one at their weight class. Mitchell Messenbrink is now number five. Bernie Truax, six. Braden Davis and Tyler Kasak, each nine. And Aaron Nagao, 11. The Big Ten Championships are March 9th and 10th in College Park, Maryland.
Ironhead!
Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox!
Hey, have you checked out our website, 98.7thefox.com, our online home for everything The Fox? Click the stream link wherever you are. Information on Let's Talk with recordings from recent shows and interviews. Information on our afternoon regional sports programs and links to all of the great Fox Sports shows heard the rest of the day. Check out our Let's Talk blog posts, local high school sports scores, and links to several area news outlets so you're always in the know. 98.7thefox.com.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox.
Beer Belly's Beverage in downtown State College, located at 258 West Hamilton Avenue within the Hamilton Square Shopping Center. At Beer Belly's, they have over 500 beers, including domestics, imports, microbrews, seasonal selections, ciders, and more. Beer Belly's is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Check out our website at beerbellysbeverage.com. Beer Belly's Beverage, 258 West Hamilton Avenue in State College. Beer better, Beer Belly's.
Talk about great prices. Center Hall Farm Store has fantastic deals to help you save money all winter long on heating wood pellets.
Come here, Bear. Come on. Come on.
Oh, yeah. And for your ferocious little Pomapoo, shepherd, horses, and just about every other farm animal, even your birds. Center Hall Farm Store has created its own perfect, unique mixture of feed, along with commercial feed of your choice. Center Hall Farm Store, 110 West Allison Street. Center Hall. CenterHallFarmStore.com.
Hi, this is Corey Comfort from Joel Comfort Toyota in State College. Are you looking for a dealership to call home? Joel Comfort Toyota is a locally owned family business that has been serving the community for over 45 years. Come see us and let us help you with your next vehicle experience. We're located at 120 East Clinton Avenue in State College, just behind the Waffle Shop on North Athens Street. Or visit us 24/7 at joelcomfort.com. And remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
The title and tag service that is customer-friendly and locally owned is at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned in Pleasant Gap. And as part of the Joel Confer family of dealerships, Monica Prisk is experienced and has been serving customers for 13 years. Cameron Confer is on the title and tag team and is there to help you with all of your title and tag needs. Stop at Joel Confer Quality Pre-Owned at 475 East College Avenue in Pleasant Gap and have Monica or Cameron answer any of your title and tag questions. Remember, good things happen in your community when you buy local.
Here's the K2 Roots Foxcast. Variable cloudiness and windy today with showers and even a thunderstorm.
Fox Forecast.
Now, it's going to be quite mild with temperatures up near 60 degrees until around 3 this afternoon. That's when a strong cold front comes through. And behind it, tonight and tomorrow.
This is WeatherBell.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
Sports Radio 98.7. The Fox. Get up and get going.
It's Let's Talk here on a Wednesday. We'll have a little open phone time coming up in the final segment. Meanwhile, we're just trying to frustrate you as much as we can for the next 15 minutes.
Oh, I don't know about
that. No, is that not what we're doing?
Now, folks, hopefully you know about our website, all right, 98.7thefox.com, where you can stream Let's Talk and all of our program, you know, Dan Patrick with sports at 10 o'clock and all that sort of stuff, all right? Streaming is great, right? We all love streaming, all right? What about your phone? Good old-fashioned phone. Again, our guest is Sasha Meinrath from Penn State. Now, Sasha, again, you have a lab or something, right? Your group. What is that called there on campus? What is that?
So we have the X Lab, which is, again, it sort of spans between the academy and the real world, which is to say we do actual policy interventions, we do a lot of basic research, but we also build things, whether it's networks or other technologies.
So it's the X Lab. So Elon Musk owns this, the X Lab?
Not at all. But, yeah, if you just go to the X Lab, .org, you will pull up our website and you will see what we do. We work in the public interest, which is to say we do build a lot of technologies. We have a number of really interesting, innovative projects, but we do so in service, if you will, to the public good.
All right. Now, again, Sasha, the reason I reached out for you is, you know, I've had some friends who told me that, yes, hey, my cell phone just doesn't seem to be as good as it used to be. I'm having trouble making calls in different places that I didn't have trouble with before. And I've had multiple people tell me this. You're saying yes.
Ugh, the dropouts are maddening.
What's the problem here? What's going on?
Yeah, so there's two problems. One is that our cellular coverage is meaningfully, greatly different in reality than what's claimed. So on the one hand, there are claims by the cellular providers to cover areas that they simply don't cover or offer marginal coverage. But the big thing that's happening right now is that we're transitioning kind of from the older technologies to the newer technologies. Now, what all the commercials will tell you is, you know, this is all going to be great. It's all upside. You know, everything's going to be peachy keen. It's going to be rainbows and unicorns for everyone. The reality is quite a bit more complicated. And that is a result of both the technology itself, the protocols that are being used, but it's also a result of the frequencies being used. So many of us have experienced the joys of the home wireless network and have seen how, you know, occasionally it drops out in certain locations. Usually it drops out first and foremost in the location you're trying to work from. When we updated, as it were, from old school wireless to newer, faster wireless, often the dropout zones increased. And that was a function of the frequency that was used, the band that the devices were using. The same phenomenon is now happening in cellular, which is to say, yes, newer networks often provide much faster speeds, but that comes at a trade-off often of smaller coverage areas. So faster speeds over smaller areas is kind of the quid pro quo for a lot of the newer networks. And because a lot of our rural areas have the most, least dense cellular coverage, you see it most in rural America.
All right, now let's get a definition here again, Sasha. All right, 5G. I mean, I've seen a million commercials about 5G is supposed to be the greatest thing since Einstein. All right, says, yes. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Oh, it's going to be unbelievable. What is 5G? Can you give us some kind of a definition of that, or maybe compare it to God forbid, 4G. Like, what's the difference? What's the difference between those two?
4G.
Oh gosh. yeah. Well, so you've asked a very difficult question because 5G really is sort of a marketing PR campaign. Its definition is really myriad, and it isn't clear exactly what constitutes 5G. It's kind of defined differently by different providers. As such, it's sort of it's sort of like an upgrade, if you will, to 4G. But what that upgrade really means is both software, firmware, if you will, and hardware. But sometimes it's less clear. Sometimes it's not clear at all what's being provided, which is why you end up with people saying, "Oh, I'm offering 6G," or you know, which company is now saying, "Oh, we got a 10G network," and you're like, "What does that mean?" Long story short, a lot of it is about salesmanship. Not necessarily a meaningful network upgrade is experienced by the users of that supposedly newer, better technology. And that's why we're having this conversation today, which is to say that people are experiencing the upgrade as anything but, and that is not just in your friends' heads. The reality is, yes, it offers much faster speeds on the microcells that are being deployed in dense urban environments, but in rural communities, the opposite is often being experienced, which is that people are seeing the new, faster network is providing worse service.
All right, so in other words, I've got my iPhone here in front of me. All right, I'm an iPhone guy. So there's the phone part, and there's the data part. All right, there's the phone part, yeah. And there's I can go online and check sports scores or, you know, blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. This 5G stuff has affected both of those, one of those? I mean, what's the difference here?
Yeah, so if you were to open up your iPhone, which is, you know, near on physically impossible, but if you were to do that, you would find in there a bunch of chips, bunch of silicon that tunes in a wide variety of different bands and that can run a wide variety of different protocols, different ways that that phone can communicate. So it can communicate over Wi-Fi, it can communicate over cellular, it can communicate over Bluetooth. Each of these is a different standard, a different protocol. Inside the cellular chipsets within your iPhone, it can tune in a 5G network, a 4G network, some of them can even do 3G networks, which is to say it has the ability to tune in a variety of different network infrastructures and frequencies. So much as you might change your radio dial to a different station, of course, why would you? But one could also tune in your cell phone to a different station, which in essence would put you on a different network, which might put you on a different provider. You might go from AT&T to T-Mobile, or it might put you on a different protocol, 4G versus 5G. And all of that is kind of happens behind the scenes. You know, the end user rarely needs to look at that. But if you were to dive into the bowels of your user settings on your phone, you could find where your phone is tuned into, which provider, which frequencies, and et cetera, and you could manually change them, which I do not recommend, but that is the power of these end-user devices. They are incredible little computers. On the other hand, you often have very little control over that. That, in essence, you get failed over to the new and improved 5G network, even though you were experiencing a better life on the 4G network. And it's sort of being foisted off on folks as this upgrade. But in reality, folks are often experiencing it as a detriment to their connectivity.
All right, so I was going to ask, all right, if I've got a mobile device and you go to the settings, and again, my goodness, there's a laundry list of settings. I mean, there's a ton of them.
Yes, there is.
You're saying I couldn't go into my settings somehow and change something in there, and now my phone service is better. That's just not possible?
How do I put this? It may be possible, depending on your iPhone, depending on whether it's what's called jailbroken or not. The reason why I don't recommend it is that this is sort of like mucking around in your personal computer settings when you don't really know what you're doing, and you could fix it. It could happen. Or you could, you know, brick it. You could end up with a cell phone, a very expensive cell phone, that doesn't work at all. And so, again, you know, a quick search online and you will find lots of how-to guides and what have you that will explain to you what you can do with these cell phones. It is not difficult to do, but I would strongly recommend that you do so eyes wide open, or you may end up with a useless device that doesn't work on any network. And that, again, is undoable usually, but you're sort of going down this rabbit hole. I think the bigger problem is that we, the end users, are sort of automatically being upgraded even when it is anything but an upgrade, and often don't have any control over that.
Yeah, I think that's the frustrating part. Is so let's just from a trying to get a solution, is it that there needs to be more frequencies added to the towers, or what needs to happen for the areas, you know, that are dead zones? And again, it seems like,
yes,
you know, in the State College area, there's just a ton more areas where it's like, whoops, did I lose you? And it comes back, but it's like, oh man, this area never used to give me any problem at all. And now it is.
Yeah.
Is it just, like, is this something that, again, we need to look to the government to fix? Is this the cell phone providers? what needs to happen here for this to be an issue that's resolved?
Yeah, so both. And let me give you an example. My office here on the Penn State University, when I go into my office, my cell phone drops every time. And it's because of the frequency and the layout of the building and et cetera. So right here in the middle of one of the most connected areas in the region, if I go to my office, I don't get cell phone service. And that's, like, crazy. The reason why that happens, again, is because there's a paucity, too few cell towers. The coverage is not well done. And there are some fairly simple solutions for this, which is to say, we had solved the problem of universal telephony to the point that we had a federal mandate that said, hey, look, we're going to have what's called a universal service fund, and that fund will guarantee that we're building out the telephone network everywhere. And so the U.S. government stepped in. They left it to the private industry to do, but they did guarantee the mandate that you must serve everyone. And so that's why during the wireline era, we had universal or very near universal telephone service. It was a federal mandate. And for wireline telephone, that still exists, but for cellular telephone, it doesn't. And so what ends up happening is private industry, which is tasked to maximize its profits, looks at the most lucrative areas first. And that's why the cities have better coverage than rural areas. Without the universal service mandate, this is a problem that will be vexing for generations to solve. With a universal service mandate, it would be solved very quickly. And by that I mean, like, it could be solved within a decade. That, to me, is the missing link, which is to say it needs both government intervention and private industry both pulling in the same direction, which, as I'm sure you're aware, is not the easy thing to do. But at least in telephone service provisioning, that has been the history of the United States for the last 100 years, which is to say the norm has always been universal service. The aberration, the departure from that norm, is our cellular infrastructure, and the result has been our cellular kind of sucks in a lot of locations, whereas wireline service is still, right now, today, any of your listeners wants wireline telephone service, they can get it. And that, to me, is a meaningful difference of the same function, telephony.
Yeah. All right, now we've only got about a minute left, Sasha. I've had more than one occasion where my wife has said to me, hey, I'm having trouble with calls. Would you call the phone company and tell them to fix it? Now I'm thinking, oh, sure, I'm God. I can do that. Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem. So in other words, complaining to the phone company is not going to do any good. Even if hundreds or thousands of us all called the phone company today, whatever their phone company is, and complained, that's not going to do any good. That's not where the problem lies.
That's right. It's a marginal impact. What I will say is the place to complain is either with the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, or the Federal Communications Commission, both of which have complaint forms that only take about 3 to 5 minutes to fill out. What I do whenever I'm talking, or usually waiting on the phone for a representative to show up, is I file the complaint while they put me on hold, which is to say, all you big companies out there, if you don't want me to file a complaint that means something with the Federal Trade Commission or the Federal Communications Commission, don't put me on hold. So this is what I recommend to everyone. Is like, if you're sitting on hold, might as well file your complaint with the relevant government agency then. It'll take you, again, 3 to 5 minutes. And those, the companies pay attention to.
I like it.
So go to the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, or the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. They've got a complaint form you can fill out that might do something.
Yeah, you almost always get a response, because what the companies worry about is the development of a record of them offering a bad service or screwing over consumers. So they tend to fix those complaints first and foremost.
There you go, folks. That's what you need to do. Hey, Sasha, we appreciate the time this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right, folks, for my friends, if they're listening, now you know what to do. Now, don't expect an answer tomorrow. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll